And hello, everyone. Hello, I'm Kay Thompson. And
welcome to Talk Radio.
And we are on. And hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to the Kay and Gus Show. I'm Kay Thompson. We invite you to listen every Wednesday from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. as we take a closer look at exciting news, information, education, and global communications issues. And while Gus is recuperating and listening, we would like to tell you a little bit about Gus. He is listening and he is recuperating. And I don't know if you know a lot of things about him, about the Newark plan. I'm just going to mention this because there's so many things going on in Newark. There's a lot of construction that's going to be happening downtown Newark. And Gus was responsible for the Newark plan. He created the Newark plan, which provided training and employment for hundreds of African-American and Hispanic construction workers. This model plan that was adopted by the state of New Jersey has been nationally approved and praised as the most effective constructive affirmative action plan in the U.S. And the reason why I want to get that in is because, you know, some of the politicians are trying to do away with affirmative action in various areas. We're going to be bringing on Eric Payne, who is going to be taking us into a political roundtable. And as a matter of fact, he's going to be making his comments right away. But before we do that also, we would like to say that we are all sending our prayers to Congressman Donald Payne. Donald Payne is a native of Newark, New Jersey. As you know, he's the first African-American to be elected to the United States Congress in 1988. And in 2010, he was elected to serve his 12th term to represent the 10th District in the 112th Congress. Let's hope he's listening right now, and we wish him well, and please send him your prayers. And right now, I think that Eric Payne should be ready on the air, and if he is, let's try to get him on and find out what's going on with politics like we don't know, right? So I'm waiting for a cue. When I get the cue that Eric is on, because he is calling in from California, and as you know, with an internet show, this is something so different for us because of the fact that we are not only heard locally and nationally, internationally. We're also heard globally, internationally also means globally. So we can call anyone just about anywhere. And we have talked to the congressman when he was doing his trips to all the various countries that he's been to, including those African countries, and keeping us up to date. So we are going to hope that Eric is on the phone right now. If I need a cue from the engineering area, from the... I'll keep talking until I get that cue that Eric Payne is on. However, we do have an exciting show for you today. We're going to be talking to Glenda Taylor. And Glenda Taylor is an author. She is a writer. She is a phenomenal writer. And the last time I had Glenda Taylor on, she was talking about Jalissimo's drum. And this is where she was describing and talking about and writing about African-American female entertainers as cultural historians. It's going to be a fascinating talk with Glenda today, and it's going to be fascinating with Eric Payne. This is the first time that I'm doing it from my office, and we're waiting for Eric right now. Are we ready?
Eric is on.
Okay. Eric, hello.
How are you doing? What's
up, Bob? Okay. Good.
All right.
Go right ahead.
So let me talk about, first off, I'm sure everybody's been watching the Republicans and they go crazy. Here's what I noticed about a guy like, say, let's talk about Rick Santorum. This is someone who has 3 degrees, but doesn't want people to go to college. Here's my theory. When you go to college, higher learning, you learn the facts. When you learn the facts, you can learn that what they're saying is a lot of not true stuff. I want to say bunk, and another word I want to say, but since we're on the radio, I can't really say it. So when people learn the facts, when you learn how to deduct and reason, you become a reasoned person, so therefore their arguments for getting elected don't make sense. So these are individuals who want government out of people's private lives, but then they want to enact laws where they have these penetration of women before they can apply for an abortion. So I have a theory. I think there's a sickness within the Republican Party. Republican frenzy. They've been getting beat up so much by the Democrats and Barack Obama that they don't want to go. And they start coming up with all these kind of programs and things that don't make sense. You know, they want the average person to make more taxes and the rich people to pay less taxes. You got a guy who's running for president who's paid 13% in taxes and hid his money offshore, away from it. And then wants to come back and say, well, I'm a good American, and you can vote for me for president. To me, that's someone who disrespects their country when they try to hide their money. So these are just various things that are kind of a little bit crazy when they think about the politics to date and how much these people basically lie and twist the truth and not accept the facts of what's going out there. And the scary thing is that there's people who actually cheer when the man mentions that college, that you shouldn't go to college. College is not for everybody. Or even higher education, which is the most ridiculous thing because we're trying to compete in the world. And
let me ask you, skilled workers. Let me ask you a question. Is this real? You have been involved with politics for a long period of time. You've been a commentator. You've been a producer. And you know the depth of the subjects. You know about you know what goes on in Washington. Is this the strangest pre-election time that you have ever heard, or what? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I don't know how much involved I've been. I'm just a citizen who's had a little bit better vantage point than the average person. But it seems pretty strange to me. It seems that, you know, I work at a call center now where I talk to a lot of people, a lot of elderly people, and a lot of them sound like they might not be African American, but they're Democrats and they're progressive people. And I ask them, have you ever in your lifetime seen something as crazy as this election, as mean-spirited and just a dirty politics? And they even say no. And these are people who've been there in their 80s. A lot of them are in their early to mid-80s. And I spoke to one man who said he voted for FDR twice.
Uh-huh.
Let you know how old he was.
Wow.
And he didn't see anything like this. So, you know, I can at least remember a time when some Republicans wanted to do what they needed to do for the betterment of the country, at least for the first couple of months when you had a new president, you know, like back in the day, like a Colin Powell back in the day. But now these guys, they just want to win. And like I said, it's male Republican frenzy. Just because the current president, when you look at the picture of presidents on the wall in the White House, there's a speck up there because it's Barack Obama. There's what they call a fly in the ointment or a raisin in the rice or whatever. So maybe they just lose their mind where they just have to say anything and do anything, you know.
And this is going to be accepted by the majority of the people. You know what? You know what I'm concerned about, and I'm quite sure you know everybody listening is concerned about. And hopefully, we're going to be getting even more audience because we are going to be really doing some very in-depth programming, as we have been doing. But the right to vote is being questioned in so many different states because of this new legislation. I don't know if it's state by state. I think probably it is, or with the individual, you know, what the voting panels or what. But they are making people have different kinds of IDs, as we were talking about before. If you have a driver's license, then you must have your birth certificate, then you must have your passport. What is going on? Are they trying to turn this back to the antebellum days, to pre-Civil War days, or what?
It seems like at least they're turning it back to before African Americans had the right to vote. It's taking place in about 20 different states that are enacting these kind of new voter ID laws, from my understanding. And there seems to be a bigger plan. I mean, when you want to force women to not have, if they choose to have an abortion in their life, and you want to restrict another group of people from voting, there seems to be a bigger plan. Maybe some people are concerned about their population shrinking. This is just a notion. Maybe they're concerned about their population shrinking. They have to balance the playing field by wanting some of those people who might not contribute to the population, wanting them to contribute to the population. And then on the flip side, they want to impede the vote of those people that might, you know, gain voting power and become the majority. Mm-hmm. So these are just kind of crazy theories that I think about, but I'm trying to figure out what's the end game, what's the real goal for all of this madness. Maybe it is to take
control. The real goal is to defeat President Obama by any means necessary, period.
Exactly.
And that's it.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it is. And there's only one reason why they are still having, you know, real problem with him, is because he is an African, you know. It's because he is a black African American. You can call him anything you want. My goodness, he straddles both fences. But they cannot stand the fact that an African American is president of the United States of America. Well, in the years to come, guess what? There's going to be more black and brown people than there are white people. And you have to hate to say this, but it is based on this. I know there's a principal of the school, of one of the schools, who is absolutely fantastic. Somebody had sent me some information about him. And he said that I am teaching an American school. I don't care if you're this or that or what color you are and who you are. This is an American school, and if I can teach you how to read and write, that's the main thing. He goes on and on. I've got to get his name. I've got to get him on. That's exactly the way we should feel, and that's exactly we have to, you know, just get over this whole racial thing. I don't think we're ever going to be getting over it, but anyway.
I don't think we have to get it. I think there's probably other people that need to get over it. And
okay.
Also, I'll say one last thing before I have to get off. When you have Newt Gingrich, when you have someone like Newt Gingrich who says he wants to return back to a classical America, that's a code word.
Yeah, right.
You know,
like
so,
we don't know the code words.
You know, and that's the whole thing. And the scary thing is that when some of these debates, that the audience actually boos questions that these guys bring up. These guys bring the subject up themselves. Then when you have the press asking a question based on the subject they brought up, and the audience boos them, boos the moderator for bringing up the question, now we can't even ask questions. So it's really kind of that's why I say there's a frenzy going on with them.
Yeah.
They kind of lose their mind a little bit because they don't want to learn. They don't want to face the facts. You know, that's why you have the other guy saying, everybody shouldn't go to college. You're going to be snobs if you go to college. Why? Because you don't want people to learn in their minds, to get enlightened so they can see what you're saying doesn't make no sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's just, I got to go, but that's just my little rant for the day.
Yeah, thank you, Eric.
That's food for thought for people to think about.
How can we hear more of
the show?
How can we hear more of the rant?
Soon come, as my Jamaican friends say.
Soon come on. Thank you, Eric.
And also to some of my friends that might be close by there that were wondering, why should we just vote for Barack Obama or whatever, Rick Santorum is why. Newt Gingrich is why. Mitt Romney is why. Because there are little children that we have that we want them to look up and see that they could achieve something like that one day. You know?
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You know, that's the reason. So,
okay.
I gotta go.
Thank you.
Good talking, everybody.
We'll talk to you again next week. Thank you, Eric.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
A little bit of politics, a little bit of political reality. I'm Kay Thompson, and this is the Kay Thompson and Gus Henningberg Show. And we are on Blog Talk Radio. Now, I know that some people have said they were having trouble getting Blog Talk Radio. We are on the Internet. You do have to go on your computer. Believe me, I am still computer challenged. I think I have to ask my grandchildren every, what is this and what is that? It's embarrassing to say, but I certainly am. It's a lot going on with it. But what a way to get to the majority of people. And right now we're going to be going to, and I hope she is on the line right now, Glenda Taylor, who is probably, I consider, one of the best poets, an extraordinary educator, an extraordinary poet, an extraordinary writer. I have several of Glenda's books right in front of me. One is Truth Beyond Illusion. This is a book of African-American women, the pictures of them in sepia color, that Glenda and her mother, Mary Taylor, put together. It is African-American women from the 1860s to the 1950s. Now, a lot of people would like to say, well, why be talking about color? Well, as long as the color problem exists, as some people think that it's a problem, you know, we will be talking about it. Yes, we all want to be treated like we're all equal Americans. The point is we are not. And anytime you have people saying what you should do and shouldn't do with code words because you don't want one person to get in office, then that is a problem, and we should fight against that with everything we have. I don't know if Glenda is on yet because I'm home in my office. Hi, Glenda, how are you?
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm telling people about your book, one of the ones that I love so much, Truth Beyond Illusion. Now, I wonder if you can describe it a little better than I can. I'm looking at it, and it's absolutely fantastic, but would you describe it also?
Well, it's a book of photographs of African-American women from the late 1800s to the 1950s. And the purpose of me doing the book was to show people what we really looked like during that period.
Mm. And these are, the whole book is, they're pictures. Very little writing, all pictures. How did you gather them?
Well, probably about 80-85% of them I collected over the years, because I'm an avid collector, and I love antique shops. And then the other 20% of the pictures from different family members and friends and business associates, I got the pictures because I wanted to have a publication which revealed an image of us that you normally don't see.
It is true. This is the first book I've seen like this, and I'm recommending it highly. As a matter of fact, everybody in here looks like a relative of mine.
Yes. They're beautiful. The dresses, yeah. The hairstyles. And usually, you know, the images that we see in the media and on television during that period, it's, you know, it's not that image that you see in the book.
Exactly.
They're just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And I just like the way they're set up. And you go from one picture to the other, the marriages, the pictures of people graduating from school, and just pictures of them in your... in the outfits from, what is this, from the 1800s or something, or the early 1900s? Where am I with this?
All of the pictures are dated, and they were dated. Some of them, we have the accurate dates, and some of them were dated by historian, appraiser, who could tell you, you know, what's the approximate date of each picture. And it's just, you just see that, you know, we were dressing a certain way. All of us, you know, we're not looking like Aunt Jemima.
Yeah. You know, this is a book that everyone has to have.
In those days, then, you know, a lot of people dress today. And that was just average going out, doing this, doing that. It also shows the different, you know, some people are in nurses' uniforms.
Yeah.
Some people, like you said, they're getting married, the marriages.
Yeah.
No, it's
wonderful. It really is. Okay, now listen, I have never seen a book like this. I've been saying that ever since you published it, you know, some time ago. But how can people get it? Where do they go to get it? Everyone should have it.
Go to Amazon.com or, you know, go on the Internet and you can find it. You can easily get it.
Well, you go on the Internet and what do? You type in
Truth Beyond Illusion.
Go to
Amazon.com. The name of the book. Yeah, Truth Beyond Illusion, Glenda R. Taylor. And you can get it at any bookstore on the Internet.
Uh-huh. So Truth Beyond Illusion is the name of one of the books that I'm recommending highly, and this is the one of the pictures of African-American women from the
1860s to the 1950s.
Okay. And let's see, Truth Beyond Illusion, everyone, and is by Glenda Taylor and Mary J. Taylor. This is a must for your libraries, and especially those of us who have taught school teachers. Listen, you need this in your bookcases, in your classrooms. Okay. Now, the other one, before I get to Jalamuso's Dream, which I absolutely love among the other ones, what is the other one that was Blind Light? Now, this is one that is a book of poetic writings, your poems.
Oh.
Am I correct?
Yes,
tell me about
poetry.
It. Yeah. Now, I could read some of your poems as I have done, but tell us about the book first. How and why did you write it?
I wrote, I've written poetry actually all of my life, and this particular book was, I decided that I wanted to put in words the experience or some of the experiences that I had gone through, which were, you know, very different and unusual, and that's actually, you know, how that book got started.
Well, what was the experience that you were going through?
Well, in 2001, my optical nerves became inflamed, and just in, I'd say 60 seconds or in a flash, I was legally blind and lost 95% of my vision.
And so this is you telling your feelings, and what happens when one loses her vision, loses your vision.
Right.
Okay.
Right. In other words.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, basically, so, you know, over a period of time, I decided to do is write about the experience, because it was a very unique and unusual experience, and you experience the world differently when you're blind. And I was blessed to have vision for most of my life. So I can explain it in a way that somebody who was born blind, you know, would not be able to explain it.
Yeah. When I read it, you know, the first time I read it, you know, I kept reading it and reading it and reading it, and it really gives me an in-depth look at someone who has lost their eyesight. And it's really so profound and so beautiful, you know. And do you think, has this made you see, quote-unquote, things a little more clearly? Does that make sense?
Yes, because what happens is you realize, and I think most people don't realize it, is that you are seeing things differently. And you're seeing, but you're not seeing. I don't see the way you see, but I see things differently. And I'm aware of the energy which is around me.
When
a person walks into the room, I know who that person is because of their energy. And that tells a lot about the person than sometimes the false words which comes out of a person's mouth.
Isn't that interesting? You know, I'm looking at the first page, not the first page, but page 7, and the name of your piece is Always. And you mind if I read it? You know, because I've read practically all of these, and they have such meaning and such depth. This is Always by Glenda Taylor, and this is in her book, Blind Light by Glenda R. Taylor. This is another book that I recommend highly. I mean, this is an absolute necessity. And it says, always waged war with perception, always had a vision, always sought truth, always cheered for others, always cried for others, always worked for others, always understood it was a path, always tried to understand the journey, always went beyond the surface. And then, there was blind light, blind light, blind light. Want to comment on that?
Yeah, it was kind of, I guess that was the walk, you know, the walk of the past and then coming into that present. Because, you know, you think you're doing everything, and all of a sudden you have this experience which is, you know, I mean, perceived of as a negative experience. But at the same time, that's why the book is called Blind Light. Because
blind light.
It's something which is not, you know, considered positive. It's considered darkness. But then at the same time, you have light. And you have light in a different way. You see in a different way. And you experience. And ultimately, it led to seeing the inner light, which is what keeps you going forward, that inner light.
Is there a different way that you see people and hear people, you know, now that you have this problem with your eyes? Not a problem, but you know what I'm talking about. You know, is there a different way that you have of interpreting someone that you meet?
Yes, definitely.
I mean, you get a view that is deeper than most people, I would imagine.
Right, because what happens is, You're basically listening to and feeling everything. So it's not what a person says to you. It's how they sound and the things that the average person who sees wouldn't pay attention to. You're hearing.
Yeah.
And you're feeling. In other words, you have all the visual. You have the colors and everything in front of you. For me, everything is basically black and white and shadow.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore. Mm-hmm. Focus is not on the image, it's based on the invisible energy which that person is emitting. And that's what most people don't pay attention to. And you really learn a lot about people by paying attention to their energy.
You know, Glenda, I'm looking at a poem that, now you wrote Blind Light, when? When did you write this?
A couple of years ago? 2010. That was released in 2010. It was released in 2010, but it was actually written in 2008.
Yeah. I'm looking at a poem called Whitney and Mrs. DeRay.
Right.
Was this about Whitney Houston?
Yeah, that's Whitney Houston and Ray Charles. And the reason why I wrote about that is because, you know, in this Inquirer, you know, entertainment news period that we live in, people forget about the greatness and the impact some artists have and have had culture. And we were in our greatest turmoil at 9/11.
Yeah.
People who were played on the radio, the voices that we went to was Whitney Houston and Ray Charles. And it was his version of America. And I said, wow, you know, that's who, you know, we walked through that period with. That's who we felt. That's who we cried with, you know.
Yeah.
And most people don't know that Whitney Houston's song, The Star-Spangled Banner, the only time that they have ever been on the Billboard charts is when Whitney Houston sang them.
Was when Whitney's, wow, no kidding, I didn't even
Whitney's
know that.
Whitney's version, when she first sang the song at the, you know, the game, the Super Bowl, it went on the chart. And then at 9/11, after 9/11, that was the most one of the most requested songs that played hundreds and hundreds of times all through on the radio throughout the country. And that was the second time that it went on the charts. And Whitney donated that money to, you know, I think it was the firemen's for 9/11, and those are the only two times that it hit the top of the charts was when Whitney Houston. And
wow.
I didn't know that. Yeah, that's a beautiful version. And what happens, I mean, when you take a song and the beauty in which she sang that song, you know, it kind of got us through that period. It made you feel, the song strengthened us. So I just felt the need to write a poem about that song and Ray Charles' version and what the two of them meant to the culture. Because sometimes we're looking at, you know, everybody has personal challenges, you know, and everybody's looking at, you know, whatever personal challenges Whitney may have had. But that's not her legacy. She has a great legacy. And that's what I wanted to do. And that poem was written in 2008.
Wow. And that, I want to tell people again, the name of this, everybody should rush out and get it. This, the name of the book is Blind Light by Glenda Taylor. And you can go on to Amazon. Let me just turn back. Sure, I'd love to read it. Thank you very much. And it says here, Whitney and Mr. Ray. Now, mind you, this was written in how many years ago?
It was written three and a half years ago.
3.5 years ago, it says, Whitney and Mr. Ray. Now you're talking about Ray Charles. Americans cried with Whitney. She held their hands, nursed their wounds. Her voice, majestic, the instrument that it is, poured soothing waters, calm on the pain, absorbed the wrong. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet weigh o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? And Mr. Ray made us see, America, America, God shed his grace on thee. America, I love you, America, you see. My God, he done shed his grace on thee. And you ought to love him for it, because he crowned thy good. He told me he would, with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. America held on to Whitney and Mr. Ray on 9/11. They united our splintering souls, spelled out. Made us whole. They went to the source. They embraced our pain. They gave us oxygen we needed to stay sane. Suffocating in the mass, drowning in a sea of tears, a sea of fears. Kept our heads, our hearts above water from sea to shining sea. Her voice, his voice. Oh, say, can you see? O beautiful for spacious skies, so proudly we hailed. From sea to shining sea, they made us see. From sea to shining sea. That is so beautiful. I love it.
Thank you.
I love it. Yeah, really, really love it. Now, I want to go to your latest book, Vajjala Musso's, am I saying that correct? Vajjala Musso's Dream?
Drum. Vajjala Musso's Drum.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. Vajjala Musso's Drum. I'm looking at the front, but at the same time reading the back. Now, this is a, you're talking about the autobiographies of famous women, African-American women, and you're saying that they are telling, they're cultural historians.
Yes.
And this is a profound book also. And I absolutely love it. I interviewed you before on the first part of it, but I didn't get to the second part because I hadn't read it yet. Well, I've read the whole book. And you say in the book on page 98, which I was surprised about, now this was written before this event, you say one of America's most powerful vocalists, Grammy Award-winning singer Sissy Houston, is another example of an American griot who acknowledges the wealth of African-American history and states that many of her experiences are placed in songs. And then you go on to say that Houston has an extensive knowledge of her family's history and the history of gospel music. She was determined to put the wealth of knowledge that she had in writing, and she brilliantly recorded her story in an autobiography titled How Sweet the Sound, My Life with God and Gospel. And I got to interview Sissy Houston, you know, some time ago when she wrote that book. So tell us, you know, more about this Vajjala Musso's Drum.
Well, the word Vajjala Musso, it means griot, cultural historian. That's what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized when reading, most people look at autobiographies, specifically the autobiographies of entertainers, as basically public relation tools. And something, you know, which they tell, you know, they're just telling their version of what happened in their life. But
mm-hmm.
when you read the autobiographies of Mahalia Jackson, Sissy Houston, and all the different black entertainers, specifically the ones who were born before 1950, you have
yeah.
a massive amount of history. Like, for example, Sissy Houston, whose family is originally from Georgia, she gives
mm-hmm.
great detail of what was happening in Georgia during that time. So she's
mm-hmm.
not just telling the story of her family, she's telling American history. She's telling American history and what was going on in America and in the lives of many African Americans.
Wow.
Like she tells the story of how after World War One, when the soldiers came home and they were celebrated, they had parades and events for the white soldiers, but the black soldiers were not celebrated, and many of them were taunted. She even gives
yeah.
you numbers, like how many, you know, were died, how many were burned, how many were lynched. She gives
Jeez.
A lot of details in her book, in her autobiography.
Mm.
So
wow.
Reading her book, you know, you could always go and have historians, they could check the data and verify facts and things like that. But we can't just pass up and look at these books as public relations tools, because Sissy Houston does an excellent job in terms of detailed history and the migration
yeah,
of southern
yeah.
to the north. Etta James also, she's
yeah.
she's more passionate and revealing of herself, but she
mm-hmm.
also gives you a lot of details of her memory of Sam Cooke and Sam Cooke's death.
Yeah,
and it's a lot of information in those books, which, you know, can it just lets you know what happened in the past. And these are
yeah.
things that you don't necessarily...
They are cultural historians.
Yeah.
They're cultural historians. You know, I didn't even think of that before. You know, but when I read your book before, you know, and I did a story with you then, I said, wow, this is so brilliant, because you talked about Eartha Kitt and how they, after a while, they started talking about where they went, who they went, what the climate was, how they were accepted, how they weren't, you know, their lives, their relationships, everything. And it was about a culture of African-American female entertainers who had something to say.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when you talk about Whitney, when you talk about Sissy, now I have to say, too, that I got a chance to interview Sissy. We did know each other. As it as people in Newark knew each other. You know what I'm talking about? The African-American community has bonds that surpasses, I think, the white community. Because when you go into a certain area, you feel like you're related to everybody in that doggone community. You can go into a town and you would say, wow, let me go into the area where, you know, we are. And you really have this feeling of belonging, of being comfortable in that environment. Maybe it's because of the racism. I'm quite sure in part it is. But it's a feeling that I don't think emanates from the white community, to be perfectly blunt about it. Here's what you write. So Sissy says further. She said, my mother worked hard her whole life. This is the first time she has ever sat down and committed to paper the story of her life and our family, what? Whose roots go deep in the history of gospel. You will read about my great-great-mother and great-great-grandfather John and Victoria Drinkard. In the 1800s, they were among the first blacks to own their own land in Georgia. My grandfather left Georgia for Newark in 1923. The Drinkards, a family quartet where my mother started singing as a child, were pioneers of the gospel sound in the New York metropolitan area. And many of us who are familiar with Newark and grew up in Elizabeth and Newark, we know the Drinkards because they were quite a family. And they are still quite a family. And Sissy Houston, as you say, is without question a master jealous Marcel. Jelly Musso, right? Meaning a griot. Explain that to us, Jelly Musso.
That's a historian. That's a cultural historian. That's
okay.
Someone, uh-huh. And I actually give the definition of it because, you know, the West African, and then I explain what an African-American Jelly Musso and what the differences are. And she's a master storyteller, and she has, and her family has a lot of history. I would love to see her do another book in which she's telling more of gospel music history, because she does it in that book, but she has a lot of stories to tell. And I just found out that Dion just released, because she had a book out in, I think it was 2003, called My Point of View, which is primarily photographs in which she talked, but she just released her autobiography the end of 2011. I think it was the end of last year. So Dion has an autobiography, too.
Wow.
And it's a lot of history. It's black entertainment history. It's music history. It's American history. And there's stories. And people will say, oh, but you know, that's her version of the truth. But at the same time,
that's her life.
And a lot of, another thing that happens is that, say, for example, when Aretha Franklin did her autobiography, she tells you about a lot of people, which if you're interested in the history of music or the history of gospel, there are people, you know, you could go back now and look them up and find out who they were, who she feels were the best people at that time or the people who died kind of young. And you could actually trace the influences of different artists by using those books. Research tool.
You certainly can. You certainly can. You know, I was looking at the concert when Whitney, who by the way attended the Thompson Dance Studio, my dance studio in Newark years and years ago, the Thompson Dance Studio, for a short period she attended, and I remember her. I remember her because she was the only Whitney that we had in the studio, and so it wasn't. Hard to think of Whitney, but during that time, you know, there is so much to talk to them about. I'm reading your book as at the same time. Look, here's another thing. You say Houston. Now you're also still talking about Sissy Houston, where I am in your book, okay? And you're saying Houston is consistent in reporting her story in its historical context. She creates an important document for future generations of not just her family, but those interested in American history. Houston notes, the social and economic gains black folk have made since Reconstruction following the Civil War generated an angry backlash. By 1890, states' constitutions had conveniently been changed to deprive blacks of one vote, of the vote. Not only was intermarriage between the races a social taboo, it was outlawed in every southern state. Blacks couldn't even associate publicly with whites, and schools, hotels, and most restaurants and theaters were either black or white, never mixed. The KKK was there to see that the laws were observed and social customs upheld. That's history. written by her Sissy Houston about her feelings, her family, during that particular time. And you know what I find, too, that a lot of people now are tracing their roots. Or is it that you get to a certain age and all of a sudden you want to trace your roots?
Mm-hmm.
Comment on that for me, Glenn.
Well, her children, Bobby, Christina, they're blessed because she's actually done it for them. And she gives a lot of details. As a matter of fact, one of the things is when she talked about, you know, when I read her book, she talks about the March on Washington and how she was pregnant. She gave birth to Whitney only a couple of weeks before the March on Washington.
Oh, and, no kidding.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and the way she tells the story, she starts telling it, and that was the first time I made the connection that John F. Kennedy was killed only a couple of months after that March on Washington.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
His March on Washington was August, and that happened in November. And then she also talked about when Martin Luther King was killed in April, and then John F. Kennedy, not Robert Kennedy, was killed, you know, a few months later. So it kind of like stamped that memory, you know, in your head. 1968 was really, you know, some year. But she's telling her story. But at the same time, she's walking you through American history. And the way in which she does it, you really remember. You say, wow. You know, Martin Luther King, they just got him. They shot him down. And the next thing you know, 2 months later in June, you know, Robert Kennedy. And she talked about how she cried. And she cried for both men.
I'm at that page where you're saying how sweet the sound discusses how Houston and many Americans felt after the Kennedy and King assassinations. Houston placed the birth of her daughter in its historical context. She says that she gave birth to her daughter, Whitney Houston, only weeks before the March on Washington. She also says, now this is your book, your words, and her words, Glenda, just to let people know, I'm still reading from Glenda Taylor's book, The Jalamuso's Drum. Get it, everyone. It's a must, an absolute must. Go to Amazon books. Get it on your computer. It's a must. And you say that, Sissy goes on to say, Dr. King's murder and 2 months later the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy opened up some kind of floodgates in me. I wept for King and Kennedy, both young men, leaving widows and my young children, men of peace, reconciliators on whom I had pinned some kind of hope, cut down in their prime. I wept for them both, their images ever before me in the newspapers and on television. And then you go on to say that one senses that Houston is very aware of the importance of recording history. She paints a portrait of 1963. Her walk through that period of our nation's history makes it come alive and remain quite memorable. This book makes everything come alive. This is, I think this is, you know, your other books are tremendous. There's so much in them, so very much. This I like even more than them. If that's possible.
Wait a minute.
You say The Jalamuso's Drum is a groundbreaking work in which eminent scholar and historian Glenda R. Taylor argues that African-American female entertainers use autobiographies to act as cultural historians/griots and record American history. She keeps, and this is written by Nettie Jones, author of Mischief Makers, she keeps the reader captivated as the autobiographies of luminaries such as Aretha Franklin, Diana Ross, Diane Carroll, Sissy Houston, Etta James, Ruth Brown, and Whoopi Goldberg are explored. This seminal work shows how many celebrities, including Lena Horne, Marian Anderson, Nina Simone, Eartha Kitt, Josephine Baker, played a significant role in the civil and human rights movements. Their unique and diverse perspectives are engaging, and the Jalamuso's Drum is an educational yet entertaining journey through early 20th century America. I couldn't have written it better myself, Glenda. Really, really, that's tremendous. I don't know.
What's really good about it is if you read The Jalamuso's Drum, you'll remember a lot of, you know, it gives you the names of a lot of very, very good autobiographies.
It's a history book.
Yeah,
it's a history book. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I wish I had written it.
And it's not boring.
Not at all. No,
and
when you start reading, you cannot put it down.
also you realize how they were very much a part of the civil rights movement.
Yeah,
they were
yeah.
active. You know, Nina Simone was out there and, you know, sang her songs.
Yeah, Mississippi Goddamn, remember that?
Right, that's right, the King
yeah,
of Love.
I mean, yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that in itself tells you a lot. Okay,
yes.
And they're talking about, and these other dopey, you know, these politicians, as dopey as some of them are, and I'm talking about some of the Republicans that I've heard, they think we don't know their code words. They can't be that dumb. They know exactly what they're saying, and they have to know that we know exactly what they're saying and meaning.
They don't care that we know.
No, I know they don't care. That's
no,
unfortunate.
They really don't.
Yeah.
We
what do you
have
say?
To vote.
Yeah. We have to what?
We have to vote.
And that was another thing I wanted to talk to you about. This many people in high places, quote unquote, have made it very difficult. What they want to do is they want to turn back the time where African Americans were not allowed to vote. Comment on that, if you will.
We have to vote. because basically the people who have that attitude are not the majority. And if the people who are current President Obama, the people who his policies are helping and support, if they would get out and vote and not sit down and for whatever reason, but there are, the obstacles are going to be there, but we know what they're doing with the IDs, and we have to prepare. We have plenty
right.
of time. This is,
that's right.
What month is this? This is March 1st is tomorrow, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, every state is different, but we have to get out there. We have to make sure that we have, all the proper IDs. You know, we have
exactly.
to make sure that we're not just doing it for ourselves, but we're doing it for senior citizens because, you know, senior citizens don't have driver's license necessarily if we have an 80-year-old grandmother or something like that. So we have to make sure that they are able to get to the polls, that they have the IDs, and that children who were not eligible to vote and might have been 14 or 15 when President Obama was elected, who are now 18, that they're registered. Because I have cousins who are turning 18, have turned 18,
yeah.
now they're 19, and they were not registered at the time, so they have to be registered. I have one cousin who, he actually turns 18 a month before the election, so I don't think he'll be able to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Because most states, it's usually over.
But as you're saying, this is really crucial. This is even more important than the first election with Obama in. Now it's become even more important that people get out to vote. And as you say, we do have plenty of time. And I think every single church, every single organization, Reverend Al is now on MSNBC, and he is really doing a superb job. I'd love to hear him. He has become a statesman. And he is, I don't know, sometimes, you know, he says things that a lot of people are not saying, some of our other African-American brothers and sisters. Al is able to say it and say it right out. You have to get to vote. You have to rally like you've never rallied before. You have to march like you've never marched before. You have to vote like you've never voted before. Every single church, having gone through that horrible, racist movement, when the Klan was actively involved in, you know, making the lives of African Americans, you know, hell. We have to recognize that that's not too far away if we let certain people, you know, have their way. This is America. Claim it. It's ours. You know, it's been ours ever since, you know. So
that's
I get
right.
really annoyed about hearing that. And people have to really get out. Every single organization should make it their business to get someone to be involved with getting out the vote. This is extremely, extremely important. So,
every church, that's the corner church to the largest church. Now, you know, we can't tell people who to vote for, okay?
Yeah.
But if every
I can,
church,
Barack Obama.
If every church made sure that their members were registered, number one, that all of their members were registered, and if every church would make sure on election day that the same way they get buses to go to Atlantic City and they go here and they go there, and they had buses take people to the polls, or station wagons or whatever form for people who might not go to the poll, and had a representative who was very aware of policy so that they can't be bullied when they get there. If we did that locally and nationwide as a group of people, that's one group of votes. And then it's thousands of people, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, all over the country. If they were doing that in their own communities, then it wouldn't be a question of who would be in office.
Of course, of course. And even more so, we should say that to women. When you get someone like Santorum or whatever his name is saying, you know, that women should not be working, they should not be doing this, they should not be doing that, and he wants to tell us what to do with our bodies, how dare they? And every single woman, you know, should be involved with a personal mission, you know, not to let that kind of talk get in the airways or anything. You've got to nip it in the bud. I'm telling you, they're a joke. I'm telling you, an absolute joke. But before you go, Glenda, there's something that, you know, I'm running out of time here. And, you know, I never seem to get enough, you know, time to talk to you. We're going to have to talk for 2 hours because there's still a lot to talk about. You know, I wanted to talk about African-American history. Gus and I are making it available for our conversations and a lot of our shows that we have done to be available, you know, to people, you know, on the internet, and we're trying to get that together now. We also have a bio in Positive Community Magazine, and that is Jean Nash's publication, along with Adrian Council. They're doing a tremendous job. The Positive Community Magazine is a faith-based magazine, and most churches in the metropolitan area can get them. If not, you need to call Positive Community Magazine. They're located in Montclair, New Jersey. The name of that is Positive Community Magazine. And also, you know the story about missing black children, that finally we are seeing some of those faces that have not been on at all. You know, we've got to get involved with that movement. That is extremely important, you know. And also, what some people are calling the new slavery of black and Latino young men. Some of these young guys are being picked up for misdemeanors. When that happens and they are arrested, that means that their whole lives more or less fall apart before their eyes. If they were going to go to school, they can't get scholarships, they can't get jobs. Arrest records, you know, travel with you wherever you go. It just ruins everything. And you want to say, well, don't do this and don't do that. Of course not. But the point is, you know, more of them are being arrested for these misdemeanors who should never even, you know, see the light of a jail. Also, I remember when I was on WLIB, if you remember correctly, a long time ago, they were meaning the NYPD, were getting kids out of high school to stand in their lineups. Okay? And they were using that. And I think that I'm just about out of time, almost out of time. So. Glenda, thank you very much.
Okay. It's nice talking.
And everybody, please pray for Congressman Donald Payne from New Jersey.
Took me a long walk to places, butterflies and seasons.